South Carolina. And the title of his presentation today is Comparison of Elemental Composition, Spectral and Thermal Characteristics of Biochars Produced via High and Low Temperature Paralysis.
Thank you very much. It's my pleasure today to talk to you today about the elemental composition of different chars. Before I start, I'd like to acknowledge two co-authors, Carrie Cantrell, who helped immensely prepare the chars, and Don, who does all the work. In the southeastern U.S., lignocellulose and manure biochars are available very readily, both as a thermal energy product and also as a feedstock for soil amendments. Our particular interest in our lab is first to look at how can these chars be used as a soil amendment. That's my bias as a soil scientist, but because I work with two other ag engineers, environmental engineers, they are also interested in what is the thermal energy equivalent. So today we'll look at some of the structural and elemental compositional properties of those chars and then also look at their thermal energy properties. We'll end up this discussion looking at how those properties are very important and influence the thermal heating values of those chars. If we look at how our chars were made, it's very interesting to see that. We worked with six common feedstocks here in the coastal plain, bagasse, peanut hull, pecan shells, pine chips, poultry litter, and switchgrass. If you notice here, we ran at a suite of temperatures from zero, which is the raw material, 350 up to 500. We have a few at 700. Many folks who are making these presentations, a few of us, have actually said how this material was made. Here, I'd like to show you that we made those in a Lindbergh oven with a retort. Here is Dr. Cantrell with our particular facility's retort. I'm also indebted to Julia Gaskins for making the peanut hull biochar using the rotary drum. Here is a picture of her taken a few years ago with the facility at UGA. Also, Isabella Lima supplied some of these chars. There was a question a few minutes ago about what was the yields of these biochars. That is probably one of our most serious questions that we are faced with at our lab because we use those chars in subsequent experiments. So Don wants to know how much material does he have to put in to get to be able to do our individual experiments. Well, as was brought up by a member of or a person in the audience, as you would see, as you raise temperature, your char yields decrease. Among our suite of 12 chars that we looked at, you can see if you plot biochar just now on a mass yield, you see a nice curvilinear response with as you increase temperature, your char yields decrease. Now, why this is important is because if you need so much material to do a flower pot experiment, you're going to need an awful lot of raw product. We also characterize our chars for characteristics looking at the percent aromaticity, carbonyl, and aliphatic component. I'll go through this fast. This is very typical information that you find with the literature, that as you raise the temperature of your char, you increase the aromatic portion because basically you're sacrificing your aliphatic and your carbonyl portion, which is going off as bio-oil. My interest as a soil scientist is to see what is the inorganic material that we are putting on this soil. I have other aspects looking at the organic part, but for this presentation, I'd like to show you some of the inorganic material that we have out of these chars that could eventually end up in coastal plain soils. As was raised in some of the other presentations, please note that as you raise temperature, you raise the pH of the char. I have given previous talks at other meetings to say that this is a very important concept, that if you have a particular feedstock and you bake that feedstock too much, you're going to get material that's up around pHs 10 to 12. Two, 3 years ago in Denver, I made a statement that we need to be very careful when we're applying this material to soils that we don't make the soils too alkaline to where we start causing nutrient deficiencies. Also notice the differences in the ash content. Working with poultry litter, you end up with quite a bit. Carbon contents increase with increasing temperatures, and you have various differences in the amount of nitrogen. It's one of the reasons that poultry litter is nice to work with. It has a fair amount of nitrogen, whereas pine chip has very little. If you look at the macro elements, this was also brought up in some of the other presentations. Calcium and pine chips vary. Poultry litter is loaded with calcium. Potassium, some of the speaker this morning with switchgrass, also the potassium is very high in poultry litter. Sodium and potassium are really high in poultry litter. I put these in red for two reasons. One of the first ones is that the sodium content we found when you incubate these in soils causes quite a bit of problems. Particularly, the phosphorus also causes problems. You'll see here a value up to 42.7. Our current research now is to look at where is that phosphorus moving once it's added to soils, and that could be a whole other lecture, but we can't talk about that today. We look at some of the macro elements, which brought up in some of Sophie's talks. You'll see here that the copper and the manganese is high in the poultry litter, the zinc also high, which is what you would expect because that particular material is added to the poultry litter for dietary supplements. The material which really struck us here is when we ran chloride. We were perusing through the thermal energy literatures. That was one of the properties that should be measured when you're looking at chars for thermal energy values. In the next few minutes, we're going to see that as to why that is important. So we have a product, these right here, this chemical composition that we'll see why does that affect the HHV. Coming towards the conclusion of this, you'll see that as we ran for the higher heating values, that's what HHV stands for, you'll see here a traditional standard coal HHV of around 30 megajoules per kilogram. Kerry noted that it can range from 10 plus or minus 10% with bituminous coal. Now, as you would expect, because some of these materials are carbon dense, they have HHV values pretty similar to coal. But if you notice here for your poultry litter, drops off. The switchgrass at 250 also drops off. But as you'll notice, and as you would expect, pine chips and pecan hulls containing quite a bit of fixed carbon can contribute an awful lot of thermal heat values. As I said a few minutes ago, we're going to start looking at some of the chemical composition as to how does that affect the heating values. Out of all of the regression analysis that we ended up looking at, we found the following. If you look at the ash content here versus the HHV, as you would expect, as your ash content increases, your thermal energy values decrease. This is very important, and it is also found by several others in the pyrolysis literature. There's nothing new there. But if you look here, chloride also plays a very important part, that as you have high chloride contents, the HHV values go down. Now, others have explained this, that the chloride ends up forming sinters and other types of agglomerates in the material as it goes through the pyrolysis process. So this is nothing new. But what's important is that you see that if you go with the lignocellulose material, you do not have that much of a problem. But once you start using animal manures, and if those animal manures are fortified with these different salts, you're going to start to get less thermal energy values. Now, from a soil fertility perspective, materials that have ash in it, if they have all these micronutrients and some macronutrients, that's an important component. It influences your soil fertility. However, if you're using your chars for thermal energy values, this makes selection of some of the feedstocks very serious and others problematic. If we wrap up this presentation, we'll find that higher biochar yields were obtained at lower pyrolysis temperature. There's nothing new there. Others have reported on that several times. All raw feedstocks and biochars contain mixed amounts of macro and micro elements. Also, you'll see that we had several that were very close to the 30 megajoules per kilogram, which is typical for that coal, and that their values were inversely dependent on the ash and the chloride contents. Kerry asked me to make sure that I express this quite well to the group here, that when you are selecting a lignocellulose feedstock and a poultry litter feedstock for thermal energy properties, you need to be aware of several of the chemical compositions before you make that selection. Okay, you saw some of our data to show that the HHV values decrease when you have a lot of ash and you have a lot of chloride. So, as I was already saying here, some of those particular feedstock selections Some are great to work with, like peanut hulls, pine chips, and pecan shells. And the animal manure, in this case poultry litter, is problematic. That is the end of my presentation, and thank you, and I'll entertain any questions. Yes, Jim. High silica? Yes, we have some with the silica, but I didn't put that data in the presentation. Well, the regression data show that if you just did total ash, it drops. And then of the suite, we did stepwise regression of the individual cations and anions. Chloride showed the one of the best fits. Well, thank you very much.